friends, welcome once again to the Perfectly Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben, and I'm super tired. I've been working a lot and like doing a lot of extra work late at night. I get off work and then I go to work, and it's really I'm kind of punchy.
This isn't work. This is fun. This is joyful. For
I look
you.
Forward to this every time we do it, but right. I don't get to do this all the time. So with me. All the time, though, is Cole Hornaday. Say hello, Cole Hornaday.
Hey, buddy, what's going on with you? You look a little tired, a little red and roomy about the
eyes. Great. All right. We also have Mr. Chris Casseau.
Hello.
And Ms. Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
How is everybody?
It's good.
Wonderful.
We can't top your misery, so why bother?
I wouldn't say it's misery.
We're all tired at this point.
Yeah, so. We're a little loopy.
But we're not crabby, though, which is good. I mean, we still are feeling some resonant warmth and affection for one another at this table, which
we
I think is really...
We're not at the point
Look me
where...
in the eye. Look me in the eye, Nicole Lamb. Look me in the eye. And ask me that question again.
Nicole is wide-eyed, staring at Cole.
This has become radio theater now.
The best kind of theater.
All right.
Tumbleweed goes between each other.
So, if you were listening to us last week, you heard us talk about anything and everything Fantastic Four, but unfortunately...
It was fantastic,
and there's four of us, and unfortunately, one of the topics got bumped, and so I want to bring it back up today, and that's about Black Mask Studios. Mm. And so, Nicole, you brought this up. Tell me, what exactly is Black Mask Studios?
So, they're a small publishing house for comic books, and also... media production, I found out recently. They were founded...
So they produce videos and podcasts and stuff?
They're doing, like, multimedia things. They also are... How did you describe it off before we recorded?
I've already blacked out.
Oh, no!
So they're getting ready for media. They're sampling properties and licenses, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
So for television?
Possibly, yeah.
Movies?
There is... some stuff in the works for them. But there are three founders. One of them is Steve Niles, who wrote 30 Days of Night and pretty much does like anything and everything horror.
With vampires.
And was also in a band at some point, I just found out too. Grey Matters or something like that. Anyway.
Okay. Everybody's in a band.
Yeah. Sure. And then Brett, I'm going to say this wrong, Gurewitz.
Sure.
He's the songwriter and guitarist of Bad Religion, which is a favorite band of mine. And I should probably know how to say his last name. And then Matt Pizzolo, who's just like kind of a guy.
Their wacky buddy.
Comics and makes controversial films, which he made like a 2006 film called Threat, which I YouTubed. You can YouTube it if you're curious about it. Anyway, so they were just really interested in being a house for... doing things with maybe more of like a punk rock value. They want to, the way that Steve Niles has described it is that they, if V for Vendetta was to be made today, they don't feel that there would be like somebody who would want to actually publish it. So they wanted to be a house that would be able to do material like that, that maybe had a political thing or just was other stories. It's not just political, but they do, what got me into Black Mask was a comic called Liberators written by Matt Miner, and it was about animal rights activists who are like the liberators of animals in, you know, horrible conditions in laboratories.
Well,
and
if
stuff.
The movie 28 Days Later taught me anything, that those are bad people.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, nobody can
monkeys.
Come from that.
12 monkeys.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that. They also had a Kickstarter-funded project that was their first thing that they published called Occupy Comics. Alan Moore did a piece in it, and it was just comics around like the Occupy movement, and it was an anthology piece. So you know, they do stuff like that, but then they also do something that we're going to talk about a little later called We Can Never Go Home, which is a little bit drama, a little bit superhero, a little bit crime. And so they're kind of just doing things that I think they're really passionate about. They just launched like 15 new comic titles. We've been seeing a little bit more of an interest from our customer base on these comics. And so it's just, I thought it was something to talk about since they're such a small publishing company, but they're doing interesting material.
Where are they located?
That's good.
Where are they located?
Yeah, where's their home office?
I don't know that.
Let's just say
Hit
they're
me with the one question.
They're in Pittsburgh. All right.
I think they might be West Coast related, okay. But I just made that up. So there you go.
It's worth noting that a lot of their books are very difficult to get on reorder right now. They are selling out, and some of them are going to new printings. But more often than not, the day that they arrive, I can't reorder it for most customers.
Yeah, so it's on a pre-order basis. And they were even tricky to try to pre-order because usually our system will do a subscription recurring. Mm-hmm. But we had to do special orders for each individual item.
Yeah.
So if we miss something or something happened with shipping, it was just kind of a lost cause.
Are they a publisher themselves? Do they have a printing press in their office and they produce the paper and the copies themselves?
That I'm not sure of. I think they probably just go to a printing company. Yeah. A lot of people do.
I don't really know any larger publisher that does
ship them off to the prairies in Canada where all the big publishing monstrosities are.
And I would be curious to know like what it is that they do as far as looking at printing numbers and that sort of thing, because they've sold out, quote unquote, sold out all these different titles. You would think that at some point they would go, okay, we need to up our original numbers because clearly we've got like a need for this. So I mean, they are going to second printings on some things, but not everything.
But who knows how big the print run was. So exactly. Is it really something to get braggy about
They sound real art house. They sound like they want to be real punk rock and garage style.
The thing is that they are punk rock individuals. They are people who are in the scene. They are people who live by the values of being punk rock.
But they're manufacturing scarcity and creating value.
Right.
We don't know for a fact.
We don't know that. Yeah, and I don't want to say that as
we're
fact.
Not jumping on that. We're just noting that there are some ordering things. They're like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I just think that it's interesting that this is something that like I was interested in because I'm a vegan. I am interested in animal rights. So I saw Liberator and was like, what is this? I saw Occupy Comics and was like, tell me more. And now seeing a little bit more of other people who are interested in the titles and what they have to offer. And also, when we say like the good and the bad.
Yeah.
When they first started off, Liberator had terrible artwork. Like it was one of those things where they just hired somebody that they probably didn't know. They didn't really. And
off of Craigslist.
Something like that, right? And I feel like, I mean, they had a punk rock person wearing a black shirt that had a Photoshop of Conflict on it. And then they were wearing parachute pants. Like, no punk rock, no, like, hardcore kid wears parachute pants.
Not even ironically?
It's not even ironic. It's just
80s
it's
retro.
It just doesn't make sense. So
parachute
I feel like
pants?
There was something
80s retro.
Lost.
Oh, yeah.
So when I saw We Can Never Go Home in previews, I was like, who does the art? I'm looking it up before I decide. Because it was really bad.
See, when the first chunk of books came in and Liberators came in and Nicole told me about them, I was like, oh, cool. Okay, we'll see if we could support them. Then I opened the book and I looked at it. And as a retailer, I was like, I don't want to order anymore. I mean, it's nice that they have a cause on this one, but I don't want to look at this book because it's ugly to me. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people will agree on that. So unless I have orders to dictate I increase, I'm not going to bother. And so then when the good stuff started to come out, I say that judgmentally, but I judge a lot. then I didn't have enough copies because my ordering habits were low. So, I mean, there is an actual part there where like they probably didn't have a lot of initial orders. And then when the demand came, they were scarce genuinely. But at this point, I am kind of curious, like, why don't you increase? Because I can never get copies of We Can Never Go Home in immediately. I've got to wait.
Well, let's reconjigger mindset a bit when we get to talking about the actual comic book of We Can Never Go Home. Because they did some interesting things with their reprint process.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm wondering, too, like, maybe they're actually able to get better artists and maybe pay out a little bit more, but still not have the print run there. You know, I don't know what the business looks like for Black Mask, but I do know that there is something. It's getting better and better. They've got, I think they've just generally got really good writers backing all of this stuff. And something like what Steve Niles is writing, Disciples, that actually got their scripting for a TV show from Universal Cable Production. So they've got some stuff on the horizon. There's a lot of hope for it. And the Young Terrorists, you just saw an ad there. That's a new one that just sold out again. And Space Writers, that also sold out.
So you said they come from rock and roll or punk.
Yeah.
I miss it. Do any of the founders behind Black Mass come from comics?
Steve Niles.
Yeah. Niles is written.
He's the guy who did 30 Days of Night.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the vampires.
30 Days of Niles.
Yeah. 30 Days of
Pretty
Niles.
Much.
And he's all horror. He's
big in IDW.
Yeah. Yeah.
But has he had any experience running a publishing company?
Not that I don't know.
I feel like this is more of like a labor of love kind of thing for him.
Sure. I want to say he self-published a couple of things because he's been at it for so long.
But then I wonder when things are... Every title that we get from them goes immediately to this backorder, death, doom, stalking information, how that goes. If you have any sort of experience, like how mm-hmm. does that happen then? How, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. so.
Without it being intentional.
Yeah. And you're dealing with diamond distributors, which already has hoops that you have to jump through as a small publisher too.
Okay.
So I'm not sure.
Okay.
What that plays into it too.
Well, it's an intriguing mystery around all that because I got to tell you, I am totally roped into it.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the book of theirs that they've. I wouldn't mind reading other books that they're publishing.
And I believe we're going to be talking about those books.
I am genuinely surprised. I wouldn't have thought to be like, here, read this comic. I don't know why, but.
Do we have any other words on Black Mask Studios?
Well, when we get to book report, we will.
I was going to mention, we'll talk about We Can Never Go Home when you guys have book report. What other titles do you recommend from Black Mask Studios? What should we check out?
Well, they had a little snippet of Young Terrorists in the back of one of the issues of We Can Never Go Home, and that actually looked pretty interesting.
Okay.
Not entirely sure what it's about.
Title. Uber violent.
Space Riders, I've heard, is just really crazy out there. Weird, weird, weird. It's got a lot of like Kirby influence, very like psychedelic Technicolor stuff as well. So I would actually be interested in reading that because I like that. That kind of plays into maybe more like independent type material.
It looks like 70s underground stuff. It looks like Bay Area stuff to me.
Yeah, so that looks interesting.
Well, something, so the epitome of what we would consider an indie comic, would you say? Is Black Mass Studios an indie comic publisher?
Small press.
It's more like small press because, Chris and I were trying to figure out our terminology.
Because some of them might be the same terms, and there might not be a difference between indie or small press, but then there's comic spelled with an X at the end of it. Then there's underground.
then there's alt. Yeah, there's people who pay for their own printing and go and try to pass it out to stores, like the people that we had many weeks ago.
Yeah.
But they're independent.
Mm-hmm.
So
is it independent from any sort of publishing then? I don't know.
I don't know either. But that just leads us into the next topic. What indie comics and what they can contribute to the industry that mainstream comics cannot. Mm-hmm. What can indie comics or small press comics contribute to the industry that mainstream or big press comics cannot?
Freedom from editorial oversight.
Yeah.
And that's a very pretty big thing.
Could be a big thing. Sometimes an editor can be a great thing. There are certain times in books where I'm just kind of like, I kind of wish somebody would put a little bit of a leash on Garth Ennis or Warren Ellis over at Avatar. I mean, I don't know to what extent there is an editor. Is there a guy just correcting your spelling and grammar, or is somebody being like, I don't think you should do that?
Is someone steering the ship?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there are certain times where you could tell it's totally stifling to work for a larger company, and some of those creators feel the need to move elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I remember reading somewhere that Sean Murphy, the artist of The Wake from Vertigo, said that if he had done Punk Rock Jesus at Image, he would have actually made more money. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's just something to be said about also your return and the ability for some people to market it and your exposure. I would say it's the freedom to do whatever you want, which comes with a lot of extra hard work and making sure you get exposed.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we've made comments, kind of joking, like if somebody is doing a title at Image, but they're also working for Marvel and we don't see that Image comic coming as soon as we would have hoped. Oh, well, they got to go get that paycheck.
Yeah.
Because that's a sure thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't get that with indie comics. I mean, the people that we had hosted, Seth Goodkind and Kaylin Knowles, were just doing that as like a side thing, you know. They enjoy comics, they love it, and they wanted to be able to share it as best they could. So they donate their time, they donate their money, and because they just love what they love doing that. And so it's not paying the bills. You got to keep your day job kind of thing. But it's more of a labor of love. And mm-hmm. you have 100% control. The formatting, the printing, just every single thing about it, you have your hands on, you have control over. And so that means that subject matter goes all over the place. It could be really crazy, out there, ridiculous. It can be really gross. It could be highly sexual. It could be just weird.
And you, but you probably get
and
to
you
keep
usually see that a lot.
The intellectual property that you create.
Mm-hmm. Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting debate that popped up a couple years ago that Robert Kirkman of The Walking Dead kind of put out like a letter, like a call to arms for people to try and do something else that's not at Marvel and DC. Try to move away from the larger publishers and get your own creative work done, you know. And he's definitely at this point big at Image, and he was just trying to kind of, you know, create a rights, like wave that flag. And then I remember Bendis took up arms against him about like, that's irresponsible because some of these guys aren't going to be as successful as you because you're Walking Dead is a perfect storm. And, you know, that's certainly a very good argument because there's not much at Image that has hit it as on the head as Walking Dead as far as a media darling.
Well, and Bendis was
he cut his teeth
on Goldfish.
He made his name at Image. So it's interesting, you know.
He used to write and draw, and now he's been Marvel's rock star.
Yeah. So that's also another situational item. Sometimes, because I remember Kirkman tried getting it big at Marvel. He was doing Marvel Team Up, and like he worked the low levels. He had to do a Jubilee miniseries, and it just never picked up for him. Maybe there was other situations behind, but
help my memory. Did he do Marvel Zombies before Walking Dead or after, or was it right
after?
It was it okay
after, yeah. So, I mean, it's totally situation. Sometimes you'll be more successful somewhere just because, and sometimes you just need that paycheck. Sometimes there's security, you know, and that's a big factor.
And sometimes you realize maybe you don't ever want to go there, you don't really want to go down the path of trying to go into a corporation, or that you don't want to just fight as hard as you're going to have to fight to try to get in there because the industry is not very easy to breach, you know? Yeah. So
yeah.
Cool. All right. Do we have anything else to say about indie comics? I'm sure there's a lot to say about independent comics and small press. Did you guys ever come up with what defines an indie comic versus a small press comic?
We kind of just, said that they're kind of umbrella terms at this point, and
I'm sure somebody's got more definition on, you know, because I remember hearing more arguments about, you know, what's alt versus what's indie. And I mean, like, let's say Charles Burns, Black Hole, and stuff like This Summer Blonde by Adrian Tomine. That's what I think is considered alt. Stuff like Ghost World, it's alternative. But then there's small press and indie, which is probably kind of like what IDW started as. 30 Days of Night would have been an independent or, you know, small press comic. Right. Now IDW has like a billion license rights and they do Transformers. So things change.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you say that a true, I mean, old school definition of independent would be the folks that do that fund their work via Kickstarter? I mean, the reasons why Kickstarter was originated in the first place were artists, gifted people eager to get their work out there, and they needed this boost to get it done.
I personally like that terminology for that, so I would agree.
Okay.
Like there's a local creator who does a comic called Double Barrel, and his name's Patrick Self, and his comic technically is independent, but it's actually the purest form of underground comic, a modern underground I could describe, because a lot of it's crude humor about drugs and sex and stuff like that. So like I wouldn't call it alternative. But again, we're just getting into weird terminology here and what counts
zine
as what.
Like? Would you call it a zine?
No, it's not zine.
It's very professionally published. It's very nice paper stock.
Black and white, photocopied, stapled, you know. Yeah.
Zines would be super indie to me.
That's the indiest of indie to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure there's somebody online that's got like a very detailed Wikipedia about this is what you should call it.
Yeah.
And it's a graphic novel.
If you edit those wikis, let us know at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. All right, moving on to book report. Sure. I'm going to go first.
All righty.
I read on recommendation from Chris a book called Nowhere Men.
Excellent.
By Volume 1, Fate's Worth and Death by Eric Stevenson, who apparently, what did you say? He's the
publisher of Image.
Okay, yep. Is from Image. And also Nate Billigar, Jody Ballare, and Photographics. I think that's a company, not a person. I could be wrong, because I know nothing. Anyway, Chris recommended this to me. The elevator pitch was, it's like if the Beatles were scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And so the chick on the front, she's got a very punk rock expression, and she says, and her T-shirt says, "Science is the new rock and roll." And that's kind of what this book was the story of these four scientists who create this company. I think it's called World Core, sort of a takeoff on Apple Core, which is what I got. There were a lot of Beatles references in here. There were also a lot of Blur references in there as well. I thought was kind of odd. And stuff happens. And...
Best book report ever.
Yeah, yes. Man. I actually did read it.
It's fun. Stuff happens.
It was very dense. I was telling Chris earlier when I was talking about it, it's, you know, I've been reading comics for not that long, but I've gotten used to, like, the rate of page turning per minute, you know? And this book has a number of pages where it's like you're reading a book, and I'm like, I'm not reading a book. I'm reading a comic. I probably just pissed off some people, but, you know, it's, you know, there's panels, and then there's a page like this I'm showing everybody. It's like 9-point type, and it's covering both pages.
And it looks like it's made to look like an interview from Playboy magazine.
They're generally like magazine excerpts or book excerpts.
It's very Watchmen in that style.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got Watchmen-esque because the memoirs in there.
And I had to read it because it's like, this is backstory. This is what character development is. And I actually enjoyed it. It was kind of dense. I don't know. I don't think I got everything I was meant to get because we jump around in time a lot. And so I'm sure I would get a lot more if I read it again. I'm probably not going to read it again because I have other things to read. But Nowhere Man by Image, number one. Check it out.
The positive thing on top of that, too, is it's like Ben said, it's a very dense read. Yeah. It's actually a fat book. It's only $10 for volume one, the Image crack price.
It might actually be the best priced Image book. For the most bang for your buck. There.
The Autumn Lands is pretty fat, too.
Oh, that's true. So
there you go.
And that's $10?
That's $10.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Chris Cassell, what did you read this week, sir?
Another Boom book called John Flood. And it is written by Justin Jordan and illustrated by Jorge Coelho? I don't know. And the colors by Tamara Bonvillain. That is another good name. So the concept.
Her last name is Bonvillain?
Bonvillain. Bonvillain.
Oh, Bonvillain.
Bonvillain. Bonvillain. Anyway, basically.
Not Goldfinger. Not Poissy Galore. Bonvillain.
There's a guy who was experimented on by the government who never sleeps anymore because they poked his brain a lot. And
he that has would certainly keep me awake.
Yeah, and he's like very chipper too. And he's got really messed up eyes, and the problem is, in his words, his side effects are permanent dream state, so he doesn't see things normally, and half the story is about him, the other half is about this disgraced detective who we're slowly learning something bad happened to him, and he's being hired to be the bodyguard of the main detective, John Flood. And John Flood sees patterns where no one else can see them, and so he is now beginning a hunt for a serial killer who no one knows exists because the guy has no pattern to discern. He doesn't do the same thing ever again. And the absence of the pattern is what the main detective has noticed. So he's beginning the hunt, but he decided to put all of these details on a YouTube channel to help get more information. And the serial killer's very internet savvy, and he's just like, well, isn't that a thing? And so now he's keeping an eye on the detective who's hunting him down.
So is he part of Marble Hornets or something with the Slenderman Chronicles?
I was going to say, this reminds me of a book from a couple of years back called Desolation Jones.
Kind of has that idea, like somebody that was messed up and they view reality a bit differently. Yeah, and they
began as a detective. Wasn't Desolation Jones a detective?
Something like that.
It was in the shadow of Transmet, of Spider Jerusalem, kind of social outcasts who are exceptionally
yeah,
gifted, brilliant people.
I will definitely say that the art is really, really eye-catching. It's really engaging for me. It's another one of these styles that my term is dirty. Again, it's just, it's very, very detail-oriented, a lot of cross-hatching.
When you say dirty, you mean like it's visually busy to you?
It's busy, but it also...
When I hear dirty, I think grungy, like sloppy artwork.
And it certainly does look grungy. Okay. I mean, here's a murder scene that's pretty grungy.
Okay.
When you think, when we say like clean art, it's usually like simple lines and colors and not a lot of like... dots or cross hatches or shading. And dirty is a little bit more, just more detail.
Yeah.
More ink.
Less left to the imagination?
No.
No, it doesn't have to do with any of that. It's just the heavier, art itself.
Heavier lines, heavier inking, and breaking the lines, breaking the borders a little bit more. And again, cross-hatching like crazy. Okay. Like, Jim Lee is kind of dirty because that man is like the god of cross-hatching. But he also... It's kind of a clean version of that. Sean Murphy is a good example for me. If you ever look at his artwork, there's just so many lines. Like, you look at somebody's, like, side of face.
His cross-hatching.
Yeah.
Like faces, they exist. There's detailing that goes outside of the line of the face.
Yes.
It messes, it blurs the reality of the character, and yet it's still... Yeah, I got it.
Is there somebody's job it is to specifically to shade like that, to add the cross-hatching, or does the artist do all that?
It's usually the artist, but sometimes the inker can be part of it, depending on the team, you know? There's certain books I've seen that they ran experiments where they had like three different inkers go off of like a print of a page.
That's
and
they were all working
and they're
the same
different.
Page.
Yeah, and they're all very different pieces of work by the end of it. Mike Alward has inked Jack Kirby stuff, and it's like this
I was actually gonna say different people inking Kirby
looks very different.
You know? Yeah, that's a good example of
you
it.
You could often tell a book by the inker.
Yeah. That's interesting because that's actually a topic I wanted to bring up today, but we were running out of time. But
we
I guess
should
we're,
save
we're
that for yeah.
We're, so we'll
spend
talk about
a little
it,
bit more time.
We'll talk
that.
About it later. But like, how much influence on the comic do the inkers and the colorists and letterers have?
Well, Jordy Belair is a really sought after colorist, and so that would be an example that
you need to watch Chasing Amy because there's a whole discussion of that in Chasing Amy.
I haven't seen Chasing
you
Amy.
Need to see Chasing
You're
Amy.
A tracer.
Oh, you had to go and ruin it for him, didn't you?
I am not going to remember that. Anyway, all right, so we have a special two-parter. Cole and Nicole
joint operation.
Are going to share book report.
So a couple of weeks ago, as this is being aired, I came across an article on IO9 gushing about this new, for all intents and purposes, superhero comic. And, you know, anymore, I'm just not that guy who tracks the new stuff coming out. I frequently look to Nicole and Chris to introduce me to new stuff. I used to be the guy that would go to parties and go, hey, you got to read this. Now, these young folks, they are turning my head around. Anyway, there was this terrific article about Hood, Kinlan, and Rosenberg's book called We Can Never Go Home. And the gist of the article that I read was actually part of issue 3. I've only read issues 1 through 3. And we've already talked about the mystique around this particular comic with the reprint process. What I saw in the article was fascinating to me, because in the center of issue number 3, is a really cool story spread. But before we get to that, I just kind of want to give it this, what did I say? What did I do?
Don't worry, Cole. She's not laughing with you. She's laughing at you.
Yeah, she is laughing at me. well, the premise is it's kind of boyish wish fulfillment kind of story because it's set in a high. It's the type of superhero fantasy I had when I was a kid. You know, it's set in a high school. It's one of the characters, Duncan, is dispossessed, geek, ostracized, and the object of his affection, Maddie, is like the popular girl in school, and she actually develops superpowers. From my perspective right now, of having read the first 3 issues, which I find to be fascinating, I'm not seeing a lot here that's new. It's just a new take on stuff. I mean, I hate to describe stories by superimposing other properties on it, but it reads a little bit like True Romance to me.
I could see elements of that,
and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. But I wanted to get to one of the parts in the story. It's in issue 3. They're on the run. It's turning into a road picture. It's turning into a very kind of Tarantino-esque. That's pretty violent. They're victims of circumstance, but they're also not making a lot of wise life choices. But Duncan decides that Maddie needs to have a costume, so they go into this costume store, and there's this whole wonderful sequence of a spread where it's got 9 panels per page where Maddie is trying on female superhero costumes and making judgments on them. But these are all, if you're well versed in comics, these are all characters' known properties. I mean, she tries on a Zatanna costume and a Psylocke costume and a Mary Marvel costume, Batgirl, Invisible Woman.
I see Fantastic Four and Robin.
Fantastic Four and April O'Neil's costume. Now, am I mistaken that each time they reprinted this, the sequence was different?
Yep.
Okay, that is a great freaking gimmick.
Yeah.
Because I only know what it looks like in issue number in the reprint, with the second reprint of issue number 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the sequence. I need to go back to the IO9 issue or IO9 article to get it. But I love this to death because it was a great commentary on how women are depicted in comics.
Do they pay licensing fees for that kind of thing?
No, I don't think they did.
No, it's parody.
Yeah, it's parody. Yeah.
But it's pretty darn close because you can recognize all of these properties.
They do that in Princeless too.
Yeah, that's a trope that I've seen like dozens of times. So yeah. I'm behind that issue, and I mean I do like the series a lot, so I think that's fun. Mm-hmm. But I've seen that trope a lot.
I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah.
I am recommending this book. I hate being late to any party, and you know, this is I read about it, Chris, and I had forgotten that I think Chris reviewed the first issue.
No, I don't think I did.
I think I did.
Yeah, I think Nicole did.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
somebody did.
And we both had read it at that point, so
And I was kind of, and when I think I emailed Chris and said I want to start subscribing to this, and he's like, ah, well, it's only a 5-issue limited series. I'm like, and I actually was disappointed to hear that. Chris's response was, well, it probably doesn't have the momentum, and I'm like, to be an ongoing series, and I'm a little bit more optimistic. I see potential for it to be a longer running series.
Not necessarily an issue momentum. It's like BPRD and Hellboy can't do more than 5 issues before relaunching into another one. Smaller press, smaller companies need to take breaks.
I see.
You know?
And the way, so issue number 4 turns everything on its head. So issue number 4 is a really pinnacle one.
Okay.
There are some things that they set up in the first few issues that you kind of get this like, huh, what is Madison's backstory and, you know, what's with her family and all this different stuff. So number 4 is just sort of like, boom, drop the mic. So that's something to look forward to. You should just borrow my issue.
I want my own copy. I don't want one that has your smudgies all over it.
But I think that if they were to go on from this story, that they would probably go into maybe a larger picture scope of what's behind the scenes of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I think this is really good. I think True Romance was a good way to kind of describe it.
Good analogy.
I think the way that they solicited it in the previews was just like a worn mixtape, a road.
That's another aspect that tickles my heart, like, is that it harkens back to my youth
trip.
Because Duncan doesn't burn her a disc. He makes her a tape.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the graphics on the inside of the, on the credits is, you know,
it's like the inside,
insert of your tape. And it's all handwritten. And I'm like,
that had me because I would make punk rock mixtapes for my friends in high school.
Sure.
So I loved that kind of
thing. And it's a punk rock comic book, and it's something raw and genuine. And I'm kind of excited about it.
So you read We Can Never Go Home 1-3. And Nicole, you read number 4.
I don't actually want to talk too much about number 4. I feel
I haven't read it yet.
Well, also because it's
no spoilers.
It's got so much stuff going on in it that
it's a big climactic issue.
Yeah, that 1-3 was pretty much leading up to. Because after number 3, I was like, whoa, what's going to... Wait, I wonder, what's going on? So what can they do? And then number 4 started reading and went, whoa, like that. But in my mind.
Alrighty. Cool. Excellent. We Can Never Go Home.
Yes. They'll do a collection of it, and I would recommend getting on the collection as soon as it's solicited, which I don't think it has been solicited yet. We're still waiting to see when they're going to actually be able to release number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think right now it's a to-be-determined date, which some of the Black Mass stuff is like Critical Hit, which is the animal rights comic that has much better art than Liberator did, but same character goes into it. It's a to-be-determined trade paperback, but so.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we play quiz time. This week, quiz questions are brought to us by Mr. Cole Hornaday. Everybody put your quiz hats on, everybody. Cole, lay it on us.
We are going back to my quiz topic, which is films few knew were adapted from comics, part two.
I thought of that all by myself.
Okay, you ready? Now, you're going to need to forgive me because I'm going to get into the weeds of esoterica on this. So, in this 1993 TV miniseries, L.A. in the near future, Harry Wyckoff accepts a job as president of a gigantic TV company where he's confronted with a total new technology called the New Reality, where three-dimensional TV is projected all around the world. Harry launches to the top of the company and finds himself caught in a web of intrigues, betrayal, and murder. This miniseries starred Jim Belushi, Dana Delaney, and Robert Loggia. Robert Loggia. And I realize this is probably not a fair one to start with. Anybody?
Nope. I think I've seen it, but I can't remember the name of it.
It was called Wild Palms.
Okay, I haven't seen it.
By Oliver Stone, and it was based on a comic strip originally printed in Details magazine, drawn by the late Julian Allen. I have been trying to find the graphic novel, and it's going for they're asking $150 for it on Amazon. So that's. But I watched the miniseries. It was fascinating, and one of the reasons why the miniseries was fascinating is that Harry's boss is a senator and a cult leader of an organization called Synthiotics, and it was very clear to me from this series that it was a send-up of Scientology, and it was an examination of that anxiety around Scientology in Hollywood at the time. And I'm tempted to shell out the $60 to try to get my hands on the complete graphic novel series. All right.
Number two.
You're going to like this one. Set in a future where a failed climate change experiment kills all life on the planet except for a lucky few whom boarded a train that travels around the globe, where a class system emerges, starring Chris Evans, John Hurt, Tilda Swinton, and Ed Harris. What is it?
Snowpiercer.
Absolutely.
Hey, even I knew that one.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was the right answer, but that's what I thought.
Directed by Jun Ho Bong, based on the script by Jacques Laub and Jean-Marc Rochette. Originally published, I didn't realize how long ago it was originally published in France in 1984. And it was based on actually there are two graphic novels. The first one is called Snowpiercer, The Escape. The second one is called Snowpiercer, The Explorers. I've read both of them. The comic is really different because the film is so satirical, and the comic book is just downright grim, but also has this tone of hopefulness throughout it. And I can't remember, did they actually leave the Snowpiercer?
I didn't read the original.
Oh, you did?
You mean a film adaptation of a comic that's different than the comic? Question number three.
No.
Yeah, moving on.
All right. This oddball comedy about a group of inept amateur superheroes who must try to save the day when a supervillain threatens to destroy a major superhero and city.
Mystery Men.
Excellent. That's right, Chris Gazzo, starring Ben Stiller, William H. Macy, and Janine Garofalo. Mystery Men, produced in 1999, was actually drawn from, it's not based on a comic specifically, but it's drawn from background characters from Bob Burden's Flaming Carrot series. Have you ever read Flaming Carrot?
Question number four.
Yeah, you gotta move this along, Cole.
After an Alaskan town of Barrow was plunged into darkness for a month, it's attacked by a bloodthirsty gang of vampires.
I have no idea. Nicole.
It's 30 Days of Night.
30 Days of Night.
All right.
Which is great timing because, you know, we talked about Steve Niles tonight.
There you go.
And that's all I got for now.
Yay!
All right. Thank you, Cole. That's quiz time, and that's our show. You can find us every week at perfectboundpodcast.com. You can also find everything that Cole Hornaday and I do at perfectbound at thepaneljumper.com. And look for The Panel Jumper Live coming to a theater in Fremont near you sometime soon. You can also come to the Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford, a suburb of Seattle, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.